The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. Happy Friday. It's the 14th of August 2026 and it's 4 minutes past nine and we've got a packed 2 hours coming up for you. Hopefully we're going to have a chat with Mark English following his European glory last night. We've got live music for you in studio and £2,000 to give away. All that after we introduce our Friday panel. But before I do, just to invite you to get involved in the conversation. You always keep us really busy on the text and phone lines. It's greatly appreciated. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and the text number. 086 60 25000. Give us a call on 07491 25000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. Emer McGuinness is manager of Donegal Mark. Good morning, Emer.
Good morning, Greg. It's lovely to see a lovely female panel this morning.
It is, and you wouldn't believe how hard it is to assemble a female member of the panel, let alone to get three powerful women at the same time. It truly is it's like the eclipse. It's once in a generation, isn't it? Dr. Michelle Maher is See Her Elected Programme Manager. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Greg. And I thought the same thing when I tuned in this morning and saw that it was three women on the panel. Fair play to you.
Exactly. It's hard to put into words how hard Caroline works behind the scenes to ensure we've got as broad a panel as possible every week. Professor Pat O'Connor never lets us down. Professor of Sociology and Social Policy at University of Limerick. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Great to see Highland Radio, of course, leading the pack, you know.
Yeah, of course it is. Well, you know,
in terms of an all-female panel.
Yes.
Right?
I feel like now I'm kind of like ruining it. You know what I mean? I'm sorry. But what I'll do is I'm going to, as much as possible, keep my mouth shut. I'm going to start with you, Pat, if that's okay, because one of the topics that vexed our listeners most during the week was calls from a European group of which we're a part, and they believe that now is the time for preschool consent education. So when your niñas in your baby schools or whatever people want to call them. And really what it would be about is teaching them that they don't have to hug relatives if they don't want to. That if they prefer to give granny a high five rather than a hug, well then they should be making that decision. And it is all with a view to, I suppose, instilling the whole idea of consent amongst girls and boys. And the group that is suggesting this have a big interest in violence against women, domestic violence. So that is where it comes from. That's their motivation. But the question for you, Pat, is are we simply giving a name to basic personal space or are we overcomplicating very early childhood?
Well, this topic made me think. I suppose on the one hand, it sounds very reasonable. On the other hand, when I reflected on it, I thought, really, here we go again, focusing on potential victims who are actually preschool children and giving them the responsibility for defining appropriate limits of physical contact. And I thought, this is not good. Really, what we want is action on the perpetrators or potential perpetrators or adults' ideas, clarifying very clearly what are, and this has been, like this has been available since, oh my God, since the 80s, right? What is appropriate contact? You know, what areas of the body are perfectly safe, what are not? So really, that was my first point after my initial. The second point is that I suddenly thought, you know, nobody is talking about personal space in the case of footballers. You know, you regularly see after a goal is scored or whatever, fellas hugging, throwing each other in the air, doing all sorts of physical things. And there has been no discussion of how this respects boys and men's physical space or indeed girls. So that was my second thought. My third thought was it assumes a degree of a lack of emotional intelligence on the part of grannies and grandpas, which is also kind of insulting. Most grannies and granddads will recognise when a child is holding back and will do a high five rather than a hug. I suppose this is overall in the context where I think hugs are really important, and the importance of them is reflected in the, as I say, the footballers, where, you know, they there is a kind of a very safe hug, which is totally seen as appropriate, where and I think very important for human beings. So overall, I had major reservations on this.
And, you know, some of the people that said that this isn't a bad idea were talking about how in their house that they won't hug the child unless the child wants a hug, or they will. And I'm that's normal. That's exactly how you behave. That is how you respect people's space and all that. And it's done naturally. But you start introducing it as a conversation. I suspect if my dad was listening, just literally listening to this conversation, he might actually start second guessing, you know, his, you know, contact with his own grandchildren or great grandchildren, because then it's like, well, are we really thinking about this? Could this potentially be a bad thing?
Yeah, and I think this is a tragedy. Like, really, children need physical contact. They need hugs, right? Adults, and often they don't even, like, a child isn't going to. Oh, I mean, it's in a way, it's projecting adult knowledge onto a child in a potentially unhelpful way. I mean, in a way, I do think adults need to be aware of and educated about what is appropriate contact, and also to be sensitive, but to be honest, like, I don't know.
Well, you're not chasing your grandchildren around the house for a hug. It's not like you're demanding it. But anyway, Michelle, what do you think? Because, you know, these are highly intelligent people. You know, Ellen Mahoney Dunlop, she knows her stuff. And this is European wide. And they've concluded that this is the right thing to do. So it's not just an article that a journalist has written, you know, in the back quarter of the Daily Mail. And no disrespect to that, but, a lot of thought has gone into this.
Yeah, when I heard it first, I thought exactly what you just said there. You know, are people, you know, is this some kind of a slow season story? Is somebody really standing up and saying you can no longer give granddad or granny a hug? I mean, I'm a big fan of hugs. And when my children used to be with, when they were young enough to be with a child minor, sometimes they came home and you'd smell her perfume off them. And I thought that was lovely, because I knew that somewhere over the course of a day while I was at work and they were with her, that they had needed a hug and they had got it and they were snuggled into her. So I suppose I kind of saw it a little bit differently to what Pat was saying there. Is I don't think this is anything to do with halting or putting some kind of something around the spontaneous affection we all have, which is innate in us, that spontaneous affection we have for each other, whether as footballers on a team or in this case to our younger children. But I did actually study it. I kind of sat, like Pat said there, and sat with this and thought, well, where is this coming from? And I think if you follow it through to its logical conclusion, conversations like this are because of those very dark statistics we have that force us into thinking about the consent conversation in the first place. And on Women's Aid's website, they tell us that 35%, like, so more than one in three women in Ireland have experienced psychological, physical or sexual abuse from an intimate partner. So that's kind of, I suppose, the ultimate end
point.
But with
that in mind, Michelle, then, would the focus not be on appropriate contact rather than introducing a conversation about whether you want a hug or not? Because, you know, if we are talking about those dark statistics and that is correct, well, then let's have the conversation about what is and isn't appropriate rather than...
Yeah, I think it's what I see here is stitching it into an everyday conversation. We know that children are like sponges at 2, 3 and 4 years of age. And if at that stage, they know that if they don't want to hug someone or if they don't want someone touching them, that's okay. And it's equally okay if somebody says that to them. And what we're doing, I think, is giving them the language and the confidence to say no I don't like this, and making it entirely normal for someone to hear that and accept it at face value. And I think the benefits of that would be huge for children as for later on in lives, because when they're at that formative 3 and 4 years of age, they're absorbing this fact that it's okay to have boundaries for yourself and for other people to have boundaries.
Yeah. But what about the innocence? You know, I mean, we're getting to the stage now, whereas if we could get into the womb and sort of start telling kids about the big bad world, we would. Where is the innocence? Because we were speaking to a teacher yesterday who's aghast at the conversations that are happening amongst 8, 9, 10 year olds. 8 year old girls are hyper conscious of their appearance, their weight, their eyelashes. She talked of young lads of 9, 10 years of age in the classroom rating girls on sexiness and doing it right out in the open. You know, so the innocence is lost there, right? And now we're even going into preschool and potentially putting a bit of ick in something. Like, it doesn't necessarily, we don't actually know if it addresses the concerns that you talk of, but we do know is that it's starting, it's just another little bit of innocence that's been taken away, but we need to understand, are there consequences to that?
Yeah, you know, it's true, and the beauty industry and how it affects women at every stage of their life. And to hear now, you know, that 8 year olds have skin routines that would put the likes of myself to shame is just a conversation for another day. But we're not talking about having big, scary conversations about sex education with 3 year olds here. All we're doing is starting to instill so it becomes normal to them to say, I don't feel like this. Not today, you know, that they have that language, and that if there's a situation in which they feel uncomfortable, that it's okay for them to say that and to speak up and have a voice. And if that becomes normal at a very young age, I think that that's a good skill for them to have as they grow older. But all of this is age appropriate.
But in terms of how we socialize as human beings, we are human beings, there is contact there and all that type of stuff. How can a 3 or 4 year old brain really process what we're talking about here? Emer, do you want to come in on this? Because that's what I don't understand. How do they process that brain? And are we taking just a hands, are we giving up on teenagers, in betweeners, the 8, 9, 10, 11 year olds that we talked of, and now saying, listen, you're a toddler, it's up to you? Like, as a society, are we just completely saying, here's everything that's bad, deal with it?
Yeah, no, I've been listening to everything that was said. And look, I think preschool, it's, you just, as you said, a kid, you don't understand that. It is up to parents to, that's how we grow. That's how we know what love and affection is by hugging. And we are here now discussing it. And yet we're confused by what road the conversation should take. So we're expecting this is what will happen. You know, we're going to tell children that they should say it's okay and not if they don't want to hug. You know, in the home, we are taught to love and hugging and affection. It's all makes us who we are and makes us good people. I think it's the lack of that that has created all these monsters that we have in the world nowadays. I don't think we need to be talking about it, especially not the tree. You don't understand. Like, you only learn how to go to the toilet, you know, basically. You're just out of that phase.
Well, that would also form part of it where a preschool assistant would say, do you want me to help you go to the toilet? You would ask for permission.
Yeah. But, you know, to me, that you should be in a safe environment up to that. If you're not in a safe environment up to that stage, well, that is on the adults that are there to protect you and look after you. Yes, there is awful things going on in the world. I do agree there. But I don't think bringing this into a child's educational life is, I just think it's insane, to be quite honest. I think maybe when you're a teenager in school, after you have you know, your parents have shaped you into the person you are. You should know what's right and wrong. Yes, they should teach you to be independent. They should teach you to be strong. And if something doesn't feel right, to speak about it. They should be taught that. But we all know, or if you've brought up in a normal home, what is right and what is acceptable and what is wrong. So teach them to be strong. And if something's not right, say it. But don't think we need to be. I think it's crazy, actually.
I've spoken to adults and they've said, and they've been quite bothered by, you know, my mum and dad never showed me an affection. You know, my mum and dad never give me a hug. And now what we're saying is potentially, well, it's your fault. You know what I mean? You were 2.5 and you says no thanks. Do you know what I mean? This is the potential consequences of it. I don't even want to have this conversation, Pat. Next thing you know, granny's thinking she needs to leave the door open if the kids are in the same room as her. You know, I mean, this is the slippery slope. People stop worrying about things like this, Pat.
Yes, absolutely. And the irony is that really, girls, you know, in a way, we're putting on toddlers what we subsequently kind of shut down for girls, you know, in their teens, in their 20s, whatever. We, one way and another, we give the message to teens and subsequently girls that their views don't matter, that their whole point, their existence is to please men, that they should do anything that sexually they're asked. And, you know, we don't seem to have any societal problem with this attitude. Whereas on the other hand, we're putting these expectations on preschool children. Like, to me, I have a problem. And even like the point Eimear made, that if children are not in a safe environment, that's up to society to do stuff. The attitude also, really, that, you know, we don't need to actually tackle boys and men's attitude to inappropriate behaviour, I find bizarre.
Yes, but what we're effectively saying, though, is we can't control the manosphere, we can't control the internet, we can't control the TikTok influences through algorithms that sexualizing girls at a very young age. So what we'll do is ignore that and seemingly do nothing about it, and then start having conversations with 3 or 4 year olds. Thankfully, the abuse of children is horrendous and we see it too much, but in the whole scale of a population, like, we're having this conversation at the same time as 300,000 children are living in food poverty.
And so many children are being raised in direct provision and inappropriate conditions, and in a context where, like the Epstein files, is on the international horizon. I don't accept that we can't do anything. You know, I just don't accept it. I accept that we don't want to do anything. And that is another reason for, you know, really examining this. Why predominantly male, basically parliaments, basically and predominantly male tech leaders don't want to do anything? Well, I'm sorry, you know, it's not good enough, basically.
Yeah, but Michelle, I suppose, you know, not to put words in your mouth, but to your point, we have this output of people, though, and you know, we're seeing the reality of it. You know, misogynism is not rare. Domestic violence is not rare. You know, I talked of the abuse of children, and it is rare compared to the child population. But attitudes towards women, things that hold women back, domestic violence, these aren't rarities. So there is something that needs to be being done differently, clearly, because what's happening up until now is not working.
Yeah, and I the conversation, I suppose, that we've had here, it's not as if we're saying that we can't have, you know, as I say, spontaneous affection towards our children. It's probably when is the correct time to start to give them a language or show by example. I mean, kids at that age, we're telling them, teaching them how to share their toys and things. And I kind of see it as part of that, you know, if they grow up knowing that they have a language and knowing that they're able to remove themselves from something that they don't like, anything that would help them to be able to deal confidently with unwanted physical.
Yeah, I just see it
as later life.
I just see it as another tranche of children that will end up getting diagnosed with something. To be honest with you, you know, at the moment there's a big, you know, empathy seems to be a big part of a test of a child for autism, for an example. You know, so there are ripple effects to all of this. Whilst I was waiting for the ad breaks to end, I was flicking through Facebook and RTE News popped up, and there is a video of a beaming Reside Adeleke, who won silver in the 200 metres. She's a woman of colour, but she's pictured there with her Irish accent and draped in her tricolour. 759 comments, Michelle, and I have to say quite a large portion of them racist and sexist. So if anyone wants to know where we're at, you just look at a celebrationary post of someone, and, you know, you would hate to think if she were to go through the comments of the national broadcaster.
Yeah, I hope.
Sorry. Go through the comments on the post of the national broadcaster, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, I hope she's somebody who is protecting her from that, so she doesn't have to see that. And I would like to see a way those comments being taken down. I think this is a remarkable achievement. She had a tough season, and I was watching her last night straight after Donegal's finest winning his gold medal, and to see her coming in, running a remarkable race. And I really don't know what to say about racism and everybody piling on, because I could see it as she was going over the line. I thought there'll be so many people excited about her, and there will be a number of people who are already with their phone in their hand going, not an Irish woman. You know, what is she doing here?
I don't even want to give the comments. I don't even want to give the, but I mean, like RTE needs to look at this. There are comments with monkey emojis, you know. It's horrendous, isn't it, Emer? Are these people racist, or are the incels and this is their little kick?
Look, there's all sorts of nutters. That's the way I, it doesn't matter if, you know, under your program today, somebody could write some crazy comment about, you know, that's what we're dealing with. That's the society we live in. It comes into our last conversation as well. We can't control that, but RTE can control that, and they shouldn't allow them or have them up. You know, great achievement on behalf. It doesn't matter what colour you are, who you are, where you're from. It's an amazing achievement, and personal achievement for your country, for whatever else. What is wrong with people? You know, like, there's so many other things in the world to, yeah, I don't get it. I never could. But RTE shouldn't have them there. You shouldn't be able to see that, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, Pat, it's really, I mean, you know, it actually has to come down to skin colour, because if we've got people with Irish heritage that go out and do well in Australia, and I'm thinking of boxers or America or, you know, in all different types of sports, we rush to claim them as Irish, even if they're succeeding under a different flag. So it has to come down to her hair, her skin colour.
Yes, but there is also, as the women politicians would know, a very worrying trend or theme of misogyny. You know, hatred of women, hatred of their achievements, belittling of women. Again, it comes down to no discussion of the construction of what it is to be a man in Ireland. Like, there was an attempt 30 years ago to introduce it as a topic in the schools, and it was closed down. By the Catholic
I get where you're coming from, Pat. I am going to push back a little bit now, because most of us are all right, you know. Like, most of us are.
Absolutely. But I still hold my point that the idea of what it is does need to be discussed. Because, I mean, when I was small, right, there were all sorts of men that weren't defined by their income. They were handy men, fellas who could do a job around the house. There were, you know, without making a mess. There were all sorts of decent men, right? And unfortunately, the society we live in, the only thing that is the is either your money or your ability to effectively and metaphorically spit on women, right? Now, I mean, all that in a way you can say. So I think it's not only racism, it's misogyny.
Okay.
In the case of Adelaide, I keep not pronouncing your name.
No, I understand.
Correctly.
But Michelle or Emer, I mean, do you want to push back at all for us, men? I don't know.
No, don't polarize it. I have no problems with being positive about men.
I know that. I get where you're coming from. No,
one of the things that we're doing in See Her Elected actually is putting in place a male allyship program, because what we want to see, of course, is more women in our county councils across rural Ireland.
We'll stay with that because the new local the most recent local democracy task force report outlines dozens of reforms for councils, but groups like your own say it missed a major open goal by failing to recommend mandatory gender quotas. We know we're not in Donegal, it's 6-8%. Well, with 8%. Ireland ranking 22nd in Europe for women in local government, will voluntary promises ever change the face of our local chambers, or do we need those mandatory quotas so we catch up, Michelle?
Yeah, I'm a fan of quotas. That's probably not a surprise to you, Greg. You know, we have them for general elections for people being elected to the Dáil. And what we saw in Dáil Éireann was a 76% increase in the number of women elected. The last general election we had without a quota, there were 25 women in Dáil Éireann. That was in 2011. And in the last election that we had in 2024, that went up to 44 women. So what gender quotas were able to achieve in national politics in 14 years and three electoral cycles previously took 37 years and 10 electoral cycles. So quotas work in getting more women into where we want them to be. But I have a pain in my face to defending quotas, because all a quota does is it gets a woman on the ballot paper. It doesn't get them elected into Donegal County Council. It gets them it helps get them onto a ballot paper. And after that, it's up to the voters. And it's like we're handing some massive big advantage to women, and we're not. And I would go as far as to say that if you are in Donegal, women, listen to this in Donegal, the biggest advantage you can have is a political surname. Yet we never talk about that as an advantage. We always kind of hone in on quotas and question whether a woman getting on a ballot paper because of a quota is qualified for the job
and
she's
Michelle,
going
do,
for.
Do quotas, generally speaking, and pardon my ignorance, do they be maintained forever, or are quotas something that are introduced until such time as there's in other words, if it's effective in getting a broader representation in a local council or a Dáil, do we have evidence whether you retain that because that's the healthy thing to do, or that you're sort of it's a short term measure to address a historical imbalance?
They're always meant to be a short term to get up to about 40%. And there's a term from physics which escapes me at the moment, whereas if you can get up to 35, 40%, the momentum then it becomes normal. There's an electoral pattern and we get used to and understand that politics is a place for men and women equally. And what tends to happen when you reach some level of equality between men and women in electoral quotas then tend to be used for perhaps Indigenous women or people from different ethnicities and people from different religions. So they then become more targeted. But the idea with a quota is once you get to once it becomes the norm that a political chamber is roughly 50-50 men and women, that the quota is no longer needed.
Emer, what's your view on quotas as someone obviously with an interest in elected politics?
Look, I have thought long and hard about this, and then I was thinking of myself, as you say, and do I think it would have helped me the time that I ran? Don't No, I was running and I was asked to run on my ability and I suppose my background and my record of different things I had done. So, but I do think if they had to do it and there was a gender quota, you would see more women. And I really do believe that more women in the Dáil at the council, you'd see things done an awful lot differently. I'll probably, there'll probably be loads of comments after this.
No, but it would be really interesting to see how Donegal County Council would operate with 50% women. Like, I'm not saying that to be all woke and righteous, but I would genuinely be very interested
to see. Well, I think
see.
We're a lot different ways. I'll be shot for that. But I do think women bring something totally different to the table than men. And I do watch a lot of characteristics that men have, women have. Women don't mind accepting sometimes that they're wrong or maybe we made the wrong decision there. Men find it very difficult.
Not all women.
Yeah, well, I'm okay, maybe not all, but they're more, I do believe, on a whole, they're more open-minded to different, they'll listen to different things that come. Men have a habit, I believe, of, and this is only my beliefs, of just going with the general flow of the way things always were done. And I just think that balance would be very good.
Yeah. I think any council that reflects as accurately as possible the population is always going to be better.
Correct, yeah. Maybe
that's
what I was trying to say, Greg.
No, it's nothing personal. I think we can take it. Pat, what do you think? And I mean, obviously it makes sense. 50% of the population, stronger representation at all levels, in business, in the council. I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. But should it be mandated? Should there be quotas? Sorry, Pat, that's the real question.
Yes. Well, on the one hand, I'm very clear. I'm in favour of quotas. I do think that it's the structural stuff, it's been described, that gives women confidence. So I completely agree with Emer's point that if they're mandated, it actually helps continuing the first conversation. It gives women confidence that they matter, you know. But it's not enough, you know. You can put women in unwinnable seats, and that has been done by some political parties. And you're going through the motions.
That's
and
a really
you
good.
Look good
that's a very good point you've made, and there are examples of that. Recent examples as well. It can't be tokenism, can it? You can't have a sweeper or a.
Yeah. I mean, we're well familiar with that. But there are all, like, we also need the political parties need to also tackle, when I say it's not enough, they need to tackle the underlying misogyny in their members, right? And in the wider public. And the third point I'd make, and this in a way doesn't contradict the first two, but I disagree with Emer that women are paragons of virtue. I'm not. Maybe Emer is, but so in a way, I think that, and not all women are feminists, and I'm afraid I have no problem. I think women, you know, it's really important that women are not doormats, right? Which is my definition of feminism. So unfortunately, women can be co-opted because we are not saints. We, you know, we have the same concerns about our interests and our future and as many men
I think,
have.
Yeah, I think really so, it's about broadly how we go about business, you know, broadly speaking.
Yes, you know. But even that is kind of accepting a biological essentialism that I don't subscribe to. So, for example, I'm really disappointed with some of the British politicians, Yvette Cooper, etc. I'm really disappointed with Ursula von der Leyen. And I believe in quotas, I think it's really important to have perspectives from all
different areas. I wonder if you have more women in these positions, do women that get to those positions feel that they can be more in line with themselves rather than with the man's sphere that they might be in? Michelle, just briefly on this before the break, where is the pushback on this? Is it the dynasties? Is it the... You know, is it the career politicians that perhaps this would be a threat to their seat going forward? Like,
The pushback to this, I think, if we look at which political parties have voluntary quotas for local elections, so there's no mandate, they don't have to have 40% men or 40% women. The political parties who don't have voluntary in place are Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Into an Independent Ireland. All the other parties, Sinn Féin, Labour, Social Democrats, Greens, and so on, they all will ensure that without having to, without it being mandated by law. So if you're asking me where the problem is, I'm looking especially at the two big parties of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, because they have the most councillors in the country. So what they do and do not do matters.
Mm, okay. And also, too,
this is not a coincidence. Sorry.
No, go ahead,
sorry, Greg. This is not a coincidence, you know, because these are the parties that are really most likely to be running the gravy train. So the fact that they are the ones who are opposed is significant and interesting.
And I think it's also important, too, because sometimes men listening to conversations like this think the conversation's about them, when it's not. About them. And if we talk about domestic violence, it's not saying that all men are involved in domestic violence. And people need to sort of say, right, they're not talking about me. This is a valid conversation. You know, my wife, my sister, my partner, you know, my auntie, these are all strong, powerful women. So
yeah.
Don't be defensive. Careful.
Yeah, sorry. You said that the task force missed an open goal, I think, with quotas. But actually, this task force, what it is doing is trying to reorganise local government and bring more power back to our county councils instead of it being retained in government parties.
Yeah.
We're talking here about recruitment of new county councillors. I actually think it missed a massive open goal on renewal of who's there, because quotas address only one obstacle, which is getting on the ballot paper. They do nothing about the fact that that same woman who might get on the ballot paper then finds herself trying to take a seat from someone with 50, 20, 25 or 30 years constituency work and name recognition. So I actually think I think that's the bigger omission really in this task force.
A caller says, genuine question, what is stopping women going into politics at the minute? I'll put that to you, if that's all right, Michelle Maher, because it's actually probably a decent question, right? So what is stopping women going into politics at the minute?
What is stopping women going into politics is if they're running as an independent, nothing at all. They can head out canvassing tomorrow. But 75% of our county councillors are members of parties. So I see in rural Ireland, the blockage is actually within the political parties themselves. Women tend to wait to be asked to run for election. And when they are asked, that ask comes too late in the day. It's months out from a local election, and they don't have time to build a profile and get known and be electable. They're just added to a ticket to sweep up a few extra votes. So what is stopping, because we know that women wait to be asked, then I think there's an onus on all of us. And this is men and women in Donegal. Donegal is rock bottom in the league table of women in their county councils. So why don't we all look around? We all know that woman. And I'm probably sitting with some of them here today on the show with you, Greg. You know, we know that woman. She's stuck in everything. She gets, you know, if she put down her tools, the whole place would fall apart. You know, she's at the backbone of every community and voluntary thing that's happening. I wonder, has anyone ever asked her about running for election? And with less than 3 years to go to, we're all going to be voting people again into Donegal County Council, and we need to get off the bottom of that table. So what is stopping? Let's, instead of putting the blame on the women because they're not putting themselves forward, let's all be proactive in getting behind a woman and helping her see the valuable work she does and getting behind being part of her team. Come along and learn how you run for elections with ourselves and others. And let's stop putting the blame on the woman for not running.
Yeah.
Let's all get behind her and help her get there.
And now is the time you need to be building profiles as well, too, if you're actually going to be really serious about it. Eimear, you've got the inside track.
Yeah, it's no easy feat. And a lot of people probably just don't actually understand the whole. There's a lot of trauma involved with it. I wasn't the better of it for a long, long time. The abuse you get, you know, It's, and then the whole work, like the lead up to a canvassing. Canvassing is a whole other, and you're doing that on top of your day job, by the way, and you're going around to all these houses. Some of the houses might run you from the door, depending on what party you're from. They mightn't even, and that in itself is very hard on a person. Why do, Michelle did hit the nail on the head there, the parties as well. You know, you are they putting you forward to get a seat that you're possibly not going to get? If you're also a new candidate running, another thing I found was very hard, I was up against politicians or elected representatives that had all the money would seem to be handed out before the elections for all these different groups and roads and whatnot. It all seemed to be held to be just before the election. So I'm competing with somebody else running for election who is able to walk in or do this announcement in the newspaper that they've done this and they've done that. And I suppose people looking at it, if you're looking to elect somebody, and I've seen that very from people that were very honest, you know, you're going in there, what will you be able to do? Whereas this one has all this and is able to do X, Y, and Z, or, you know, and plus, I don't think it was happening to me being a woman, though. I think it was just I didn't have the leverage. And plus the fact it was complicated with there was two or three Fianna Fáil candidates running at the same time.
Yeah, in the close area. Pat, have I missed it? Or do we hear enough from Mary Coughlin in her own county, you know, held the second highest position in the country, Jennifer Carroll McNeill, all the other, you know, women that have made it to the, do we hear enough from them about this conversation? Maybe they are constantly talking about it. I'm not saying they're gatekeepers, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, are we hearing people like Michelle on the ground, you know, Emer, who's been there. But do we hear enough from the actual women that have made it calling this out on a regular enough basis, either in the media or in the Dáil? Or are they, maybe they themselves now at this point are afraid to put their head above the parapet? I don't want to do anyone a disservice, Pat, but I haven't heard really any recent organised, you know, vocal support for more women in politics from the women that have made it.
Well, I mean, they're a minority. Like, again, we're blame the women.
No, that's not true. The women are in a... what I'm saying is of course, I'm not blaming them.
They are a minority, Greg. And in a way, unfortunately, biting the hand that feeds you is an unpopular pastime. I'm not saying it shouldn't be done, but it is an unpopular pastime. And it does threaten their own position. Because one of the weird things about Irish society, and I mean, it's even been evident in this programme, that as soon as you begin to talk about the woman question, you know, the men get nervous, you know, is it me? Am I a nice guy? And
yes, but I'm trying to do my bit. I'm trying to do, yes, but I'm trying to do my bit as part of the wider conversation for men not to think that they're talking about them. So it gives the space for a conversation without everyone getting defensive.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that. And it reflects very well on you and on many other men. But I'm saying calling on women to call out the system. Tricky.
Okay.
Very tricky. One of the things that there are other problems in terms of women running for election and women being successful. And they are minor details called women still do most of the work in the home. Mm. And obviously they're in paid work, they're in unpaid work. And now they're, you know, trying to really, and I think it is important to be in the public arena. Mm-hmm. There's also the minor detail that local government is, well, to put it bluntly, it's a bit of a mess. It's ineffective. It needs more power. And the question as to whether women, you know, a rational woman sitting down thinking, well, you know, where are my efforts best spent on the assumption that I can be effective in a whole load of areas?
Pat.
So there is also culture and the violence, which is, we've talked about, the internet hostility, not only Rashika Adelaide, but other women.
Okay.
It's documented in the case of female politicians. Sorry, Greg.
No, I just... and you make it, but I just wanted, from Michelle's perspective, from she, her elected the programme manager, in 20 seconds, if you don't mind, Michelle, Is there anything to my question at all, or am I woman blaming again, or what?
There is, but it's the. I actually want to pick up really on a point Emer made because I think it's critical.
Okay,
to
do
all
that,
of this,
but if you
was,
could do it briefly.
Was the hardest thing. I talked about the advantage of having a political surname, but actually a massive advantage is to already be a councillor because you have all the positive association with that. And because there are so many men in the system in Donegal already and they all run again, that's where I think the task force, and when we're talking about this, we need to talk about the amount of people. It's great having a pipeline of like ourselves preparing women to run for election, but what's at the other end of the pipeline? Is it stuck?
All right, Dr. Michelle Maher, always a pleasure. See her elected. And if you are interested in running for politics, there is support out there. Check out See Her Elected. Thank you very much indeed. Pat O'Connor, it's always a pleasure. I do enjoy my beating every Friday morning now and again. look after yourself.
Yeah, Greg, I'm in your fan club.
I know, Pat, I am joking. That's why we invite you on so much, because we love having you on in your views. And Emer McGuinness, as always, thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too, Greg.
Bye-bye. Look after yourself. I am delighted to say, congratulations, Mr. Mark English. How are you keeping?
Yeah, I keep really well, Greg. It's brilliant to wake up as European champion. Still struggling to put it into words, but it's a good feeling.
When you manifest it, when you imagine it happening, when you think of how it might feel, how different is the experience when it actually happens?
Yeah, it's very different. Like, I'm still almost in the mindset of just trying to focus on what it takes to get here, as opposed to thinking about the aftermath and the emotions that come with it. So it'll take me a while to process it all, but it's brilliant to do it in front of such a great Irish crowd and so many people who just personally supported me over the years were there last night. And yeah, as I say, it's just an amazing feeling.
I mean, even in terms of your career development, that in of itself would be a huge achievement. But to be able to increase from already high level to win a medal at this stage is almost remarkable. How have you eked out? And I wonder, is it like the top 10% or top 0.5%, sorry, of what you have? How did you manage to get more out of you yourself to succeed at this level?
Well, I changed coach to Justin Rinaldi at the end of 2024, and he made a big difference in my training. At that point, I was already full-time devoted to athletics, but it just meant that the training volume would have increased, and I went on altitude camps. And I just took advice from people that knew more about areas like nutrition and physiology and strength and conditioning, and just, I guess, sat down at a table and tried to make it work. And thankfully it just came together at the right time yesterday. And yeah, as I said, like, it's been 16 years waiting to get back on top of a podium, and to finally get back on top of it again was just an amazing feeling.
Your career would have been astonishing without that, but how much of a cherry on the top of the cake is this that you can say, whenever you decide to hang up the running shoes, that you have that gold medal in your around your neck?
Yeah, it just gives me peace of mind, I think, personally, more than anything, because I knew what I was capable of doing and I hadn't done it. So that's just why I really wanted to get the gold medal yesterday, just to make me personally satisfied with my career to this point. So yeah, it's amazing. And yeah, I'm still struggling to put it into words. I got 3 hours sleep last night, so it's difficult, but I am struggling to put it into words at the minute.
Right, couple of potentially silly questions. When you walk out onto the track, what's your heart rate at that point? Or how are you controlling your adrenaline, or maybe you're not?
I actually have an answer for this because I wore my watch last night in time of the race, so I have the data.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that high before the race started. I will have to check it properly, but I think it was about 100 or 120,
wow.
I think, before the race started.
That's astonishing. Yeah. So you've done all of the work, and I imagine when you're working with the nutritionists and all the experts in different areas, there's a bit of a weight on your shoulder at the starting line too as well, because they've put the time and the effort into you. But you also, you have to strategize, right? So how much of your race plan is before you take off, and how much of it is on the fly?
Yeah, no, I would have strategized a lot with my coach Justin Ronaldo before the race, just about different scenarios and like what to do in each of them. And I guess like we had all of the athletes in that race probably prepared a race plan with Max Bergen, the British athlete, in the race. And then when we found out that he had pulled out just before it, I think that probably unsettled a few people. And Justin just told me, just stay calm, just stick to the race plan of being in contention for the for most of the race. And then when it comes to the last 100 meters, just use the energy you have left to execute the kill move. And thankfully it worked out brilliantly.
It really did. And so say, for instance, you run wide, you say, right, I want to stay out of the potential. And we've seen it in other races of legs getting tied up or what have you. Like, is there a consequence to stepping out a foot or two in terms of, you know, the overall race performance and time?
Yeah, like, well, I knew it wouldn't be a fast race. So I think we went through in 53 through 400 meters, and then it didn't really pick up from 400 meters to 600. So it was just like a waiting game and until that last kind of 120 meters left. So I think the last 100 meters was 12.3 seconds, which is very quick.
That's
so
pretty impressive, like, isn't it?
Yeah. So it was pretty much a sprint finish, and like the times don't really... It didn't concern me. Like, I ran a championship record in the semifinal, so I knew that capability was there. But yeah, it's just all about getting that gold medal.
It was clear that you really, really wanted this, and in fact, you said it in your interview with RTE. But you've been incredibly competitive throughout your career. I'm just wondering, from the psychology perspective, did something change in this? Like, in other words, was this extra important, and would that allow you to get a little bit of extra out of yourself?
Yeah, no, it was important because I knew that the win was realistic. And like before the race, I went down to the shop and I bought an A4 refill pad and a pen, and I just wrote down I'm European champion 15 times before the race. Wow. just to reinforce the idea that I'd already won it, just to calm me down. So I don't know. I guess it worked, but it... Yeah, it was amazing.
That really is remarkable. And I suppose you can lean on your expertise in the medical field as well. Much has been made of the age gap between you and the others. Is that a factor? How big of a deal was it that you were able to bridge that gap? Commentators are focusing on it. I'm just curious from the competitor's perspective.
Yeah, well, like, I don't really feel like I'm much older than these guys. Yeah. And like, I know I'm putting in the right training, so that's something I would have learned that maybe they don't have just due to their age at the minute. It's just that experience of knowing what works and what doesn't at a championship. So there's a lot of things too with age that you do have an advantage with. So I don't think it's a distinct disadvantage, but I like that to be 33 and 6 years older.
Finally, we were listening last night to Patsy McGonagall, who was either in tears or on the brink, hard to describe. So many people and your own family, your dad, etc., have invest so much in you emotionally, but also too in terms of, you know, taking you to training here and there in the dark winter nights and what have you. How much of this success is about that infrastructure and those that have helped you along the way, Mark? Ultimately, it's an individual sport and you did it, but you know, it takes a community, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does take a community. I was just saying there's a lot of unspoken effort that goes in behind the scenes, and to give back to the likes of Dad there, came over to Sierra Nevada in November, December time. You know, my coach Justin, who's traveled over from his easy young family back in Australia, and he's over here at the Europeans. And like the rest of the support staff, I mean, it's not a sport where you earn massive amounts of money, so you do it for the love of it. And like to give back to them guys last night was brilliant. And like, you know, how close Birmingham is to Ireland, it was brilliant Irish support. Somebody of my cousins from Donegal came over, and it was brilliant.
Fantastic stuff. And of course, then followed up by a silver after you. Fantastic, really, for us. So what a night.
Yeah, it was class. I got to see Rashida's race just the last 50 metres. So yeah, it was brilliant. And I knew whenever she crossed the line, it was a great night for Irish athletics. And so I just tried to absorb it as much as I could at that point.
And finally, how do you top this? What's next?
So I've got the Loxan Diamond League next week. So it'll be getting back to training fairly swiftly, and I'll get ready for that. And then hopefully, if that goes well, the Diamond League final in Brussels, and then we'll finish out the season with the World Ultimate Athletics Championships in Budapest in September.
Well, of course, you're not far removed from Ireland, so you'll know the impact this has had on people in your own county as well, too, your own people. The level of pride, the viewership, I would say, was through the roof up here. We couldn't be any more proud of you, Mark, and we're so, so delighted. And it's just astonishing what you've achieved. And thanks for bringing a bit of joy into our lives.
Thanks a million, Greg. Thanks for having me on this
morning. Look after yourself, Mark. Okay, that is Mark English there. And he's back to training again soon. It's not very exciting, is it? I mean, it's not like there's a victory tour for months on end and all that. He's getting ready for the Diamond League, where there is a little bit of moolah in the Diamond League. So that is important as well. Some of your, we've loads of messages coming in. Congratulations to Mark English on getting his gold medal. What a race. Shows what you can achieve with hard work and commitment. Great result for Adeleke after all the injuries she had to deal with last year. That comes in from Cillian Carndonagh. Indeed, in her story, her arc, if you were to look at her arc for the season, it's astonishing. And Mark's arc, I suppose, is it's career-wise, isn't it? And isn't that fascinating that he's writing down, your European champion, your European champion, and he wrote it 15 times, and he went out to actually get to get a A4 book to do that in. You know, I mean, there's lessons for us all to learn in different elements of life. We're not going to run a race like he did, but we can learn stuff, can we? Right, it is that time. We have in studio with us Sean Quinn, the CEO of Highland Radio. And it's not that long ago since we actually began this process, and we're already about to make someone €2,000 richer. The draw is about to happen. How exciting, Sean?
So excited, Greg. Friday, giving away money. Where else? As they say, where else would you get it?
Yes, and it's not just this show. John Breslin is in Rafo, isn't he?
He is. He's out. He's out and about today. So I think about 11:45, roughly, we'll be giving away another 2,000.
So that means the draw drum, the trombola, is going to Rafo. And all of your tickets, every one of you that purchased a ticket since we launched this, your ticket is in the trombola. And that ticket is associated with your name. So we'll talk a little bit. Shall we pull a ticket out? Now,
yeah,
it's been rotated extensively, but I'm sure Sean's going to give it another couple of goes. Yeah. And just be conscious that the camera is over your left shoulder. It's this one we're using today, if you don't mind, Sean. So I don't know. Do you dig deep? Do you take one off the top? Do you take one off the bottom? I don't know. All you do is you make sure you don't toss it. And okay. In it goes. And the winning ticket is about to come out. In fact, this person is €2,000 better off. 12:39, 1239. That person has won €2,000. You've won it. You don't have to. We want to get you. We want to speak to you. But my point is it's not like some competitions where you have to say a phrase that pays or anything like that. You have won €2,000. 1239.
You're a winner.
You are a winner. Right. Okay. So the lines are back open again, by the way. So if you want to have five chances to win, there's €2,000 being given away on John Breslin's show around the Northwest in the next couple of hours. There's €2,000 then on the 21st of August on Jive Time. There's €2,000 then on the home stretch on the 28th. There's €2,000 on the 4th of September, and then €10,000. So if you missed out this morning, please be free. Feel free to get your tickets now. Could be your lucky ticket. One ticket, €15. You can get five for 50, and you will have five chances to win. So it's great, isn't it? €2,000. A lovely wee lift. I'd love it.
Brilliant. And what's more impressive, I think you did that from memory there, Greg.
You think?
I was so impressed. I'm thinking, how's he getting all this?
I possibly could have, but thanks to the team, I had that in front of me, because I'm terrible on dates, especially when they cross over the end of a month into the next month.
Yeah, well, it's exactly. But no, that's great. Listen, I love this part of the year because there's a lot of cost involved in going back to school, credit cards from holidays, day trips, etc. Cost of living. But so to get €2,000 on a Friday.
I get you, and I do get that angle, but yeah. I'll tell you what I'd be doing. I'd be heading down to Atlantic Traveller, onto loveholidays.ie, and I'd be booking myself a little all-inclusive, so I would.
That would sound nice.
Is this person on? Okay, we're waiting. That's what I'd do.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't blame you.
I'd go to the southwest of Lanzarote. all inclusive.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you know what? It's actually a nice temperature there at the moment.
Annette, Rob, are you there?
I am, yeah.
Hello, Annette. It's Greg Hughes at Highland Radio here. How are you keeping?
I'm keeping good.
I've some good news for you, but it also could be bad news. It depends on what you think of the person I'm about to mention. Congratulations, you're the first ticket out in our 10,000, our 20,000 euro mega cash draw. You've won, your ticket that you bought has won $2,000. Congratulations.
Well, that's brilliant. Thank you.
2,000 euro better off. Now, the only thing is, shall I mention the name that's on it, or should we just leave it between you and me, Annette? Because it's
you can mention the name.
Anne Marie Gallagher. It's her name that you put on the ticket. So, does that $2,000 go to her? Do you split it? What happens here?
That $2,000 goes to her, and I'm delighted for her.
Oh, fantastic! And is she a relation of yours, Annette? Or
she's my best friend. Yeah.
Oh wow!
What a best friend to have.
So, and it's her birthday next Friday. So it's a wee treat for her too.
Oh my word, Anne Marie Gallagher! The pressure's on now for you to organise a trip away for you and Annette, isn't that it, Annette?
Oh well, we'll do something. We'll do something. Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, congratulations. 1239.
That is brilliant.
Yeah, and you'll pass on the good news to Anne Marie.
I will certainly. Thank you so much.
All right, congratulations. When did you get your ticket, Annette?
I think it was last week.
Okay, very good. You were one of the early ones in. And are you normally lucky, or is this...
My daughter won on the last ones as well, the last draw, so I bought her the ticket as well.
How much did she win?
She won 1,000.
Okay, well, you've beaten her by 1,000 anyway. Congratulations.
Luck comes three times as well, Greg, three times. So.
Well, your ticket's going back in, so either Anne-Marie could win or you could win. And it's, just out of interest, what's your favourite radio station?
Oh, Highland Radio.
Oh, you are the best. Listen, safe journey, Annette. That's Annette Robb from Newtown.
Thank you so much.
Well done to you and her best friend, Anne-Marie Gallagher. Is the winning name, and Annette is giving the $2,000 to Anne-Marie because it's hers.
Question for you, Greg.
Go ahead.
So, if you bought 5 tickets and my name is up, would you give it to me?
You would have to, because to be honest with you, the hardest part would have been writing your name down to begin with. But yeah, of course I would.
I'd be so, I would be happy for my friend, right? But really inside, I'd be saying, why is it not my ticket? Why is it not my ticket?
But I think, Annette, and this is not a commentary on you, but I think there are some people, and Annette comes across to me like that, there are some people that actually get genuine joy from the happiness in others.
Absolutely.
And I got that impression of her that she thinks, do you know what?
Yeah.
This is lovely for Anne-Marie. It's Anne-Marie Gallagher's birthday next Friday.
Yeah, what a birthday.
They're best friends.
Yeah.
Right? So, come on, Anne-Marie.
Okay.
Do you know
what I'm saying? So you're going to buy me a ticket for, say, the Donegal GA draw. You buy one for me, will you?
Ooh, God. Well, I'll keep it in-house.
I'll buy one for you if you buy one for me. How's that?
All right, not so bad. Right, let's get that ticket back in the draw, John, because we doubted you one time. We have seen the same ticket come out twice. So let's get it back in, Sean.
Okay.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Okay, and there you go. Anne-Marie, you're back in. Who's to say? That draw drum will be well shook by the time it gets to Rafo on those roads. But you still have a chance, or you still have a chance to get your name in that draw drum for this afternoon's 2,000 euro. Coming up between 12 and 1, John Breslin around the Northwest will be making someone else's day. So get in touch with us right now by contacting the website highlandradio.com, highlandradio.com. Buy your tickets there. There's still 5 draws, by the way, not to be sniffed at. $2,000 today, but also if you want to give us a call, 07491 25000, we can do that, or you can call up to us. Customer service awards, what's the reaction been like so far? I love to see on Facebook businesses saying give us a nomination. I love that side of it.
It's been insane. There's over 2,000 nominations already. She's waiting to get this drum go to Rafo.
We all just relax. Oh, there you go, Corinne.
Well done, Corinne. Well done. Well done.
It's looking at the left here. It's freaking me out.
So, over 2,000 nominations in less than 24 hours, which is brilliant.
Okay. Brilliant. So, 2,000 individual nominations of businesses. Yeah. Now, obviously, there might be multiples, but that's astonishing.
It's actually ahead of last year already. Mm-hmm. So,
just as well, while we're in a plug-a-thon, mm-hmm. get onto our website and click the Customer Service Awards. And what it really is about is saying thank you to a business that you've used to say, you know what, you looked after us, you did a great job, and you deserve recognition. Simple as that, costs you nothing, just a little bit of your time. And we've really gone out of a way to make that as short as possible. So get involved in that. Are you going to Riffo?
No, I'm heading for Dunfanaghy. We have a big day down there today.
That's so. Right. Is it too late to enter?
It's a bit slow. Yeah, I think if you wanted to play early afternoon, you'd be fine. But after 2 o'clock,
because this is the Ronald McDonald House Golf Classic. It's sponsored by iMotors, and it's at the Dunfanaghy Golf Club. It is today. It's probably too late, but listen, for those teams that have entered, they got a round of golf for £50 a skull. And that includes dinner and entertainment. And the entertainment is Sean singing
My
Sweet
Way.
Caroline.
And My Way. I've got 4 songs now, Greg. I'm getting better.
I argue you've got 1.5. And there's prizes and all that jazz. That's going to be a good evening.
It's going to be a great day. And do you know what? It's a fabulous charity. I'm delighted that we're involved in it. And we're going to raise a lot of money today. There's already been sponsorship. Business have been very good, supportive. So, yeah, hopefully it stays dry. And I suppose the last thing I'm going to wish you is the best of luck in our team today.
Yes, me, you, David, and your middle son.
Owen Quinn, yes.
Owen Quinn, okay.
He's away practicing as we speak.
Is he?
Yeah, because he thinks that he's going to have to be extremely good.
What is the rules? Do we all just hit our balls?
Yeah, it's a way of putting it, yeah.
But, is it
each shot. You play each shot. It's the best two scores count, so... on each hole.
So you're contributing throughout the whole 18.
Yeah.
Brilliant. But you play your ball to the end.
And then there's a couple of things as well where.
Is there any nearest the pins?
Par threes. I was just going to say
Excellent.
That. Every par three is the nearest the pin. Excellent. So that'll be a good competition.
And longest drive, which hole?
No, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. And
possibly sorry the one about that, thing Greg. I may have had a chance.
But
at
you
least
have to,
in the
thing
ball.
Is, though, you have to put it on the fairway.
Oh,
so
right,
that's
okay.
You out.
Right, okay.
Last
so
thing is there's
count.
A yellow ball. You'll love the yellow ball.
Yeah.
Where each player takes the yellow ball for a hole, and you have to combine the scores. It's a nightmare. The earlier we get rid of that ball today, the better.
And how do you just drive it into the sea, or how do you
just get rid of it? Get rid of it, because it's the worst score you'll get at every hole.
Get that trombola to Riffo, will you? One of us anyway. Okay, good
Thanks,
luck. See you later. Right. Do not go anywhere, because we've got loads to keep you informed and loads to keep you entertained, including some live music for you. I'm going to give you a brief preview of this week's podcast. And our guest is Councillor Jerry McMonagall. And he joined us in recent times there just to run through his life in Derry, growing up in the Troubles, his interactions with the RUC at that time, and how he found himself in Donegal. And we're going to hear a little clip of the podcast, which is available for you at 11 o'clock. And I suppose in this podcast, he's kind of picking up, what life was like in the north and in terms of, his dad's employment, etc.
But I remember he got a job in Belfast in the shipyard. And that was great news in our house, because it was a long-term employment. And away he went. And on that Monday morning at 6:30, and he was back in the house around 12:30 or 1 o'clock, where he was put off him and 3 other men that went with him, his friends, were put off the job because they were Catholics. And so there's that discrimination, and we grew up with that. If around the 12th of July, if you're wearing a green pair of trousers or a green jacket, you weren't allowed into the town. The town centre was effectively sealed off. There was barricades, armed soldiers, search people. If you'd go into your town centre, you had to go through turnstiles and be searched and all. So growing up, it wasn't the same as growing up in a lot of other towns like Letterkenny or Donegal Town or anywhere else down here. But in the north, like we grew up with that.
And regardless of even what the numbers were, then you would have felt like a minority.
Yeah, very much so. And there's no argument. The facts are there. The statistics, the Catholics were discriminated against. And the city I was born in, it was gerrymandered to suit the unionist minority. So all the facts, and it's there. It's there to be seen. The whole thing around the university, which probably was the catalyst for the civil rights movement, it was the final straw, being locate it in Coleraine, and that where it wasn't actually should have been in the second largest city in the six counties, which is Derry.
That was really that has far more political significance in your view than many might realise.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you explain a bit more as to why that would have?
Well, you know,
in the day,
it was around opportunity again, and as we all know, education is a great leveller, and it opens up so many doors for you when you get that education. And to be continually discriminated against, and then all of a sudden you were getting an expectation that a new university was being built, and it would be built in Derry. And then at the last minute, that was pulled from under you, and it was relocated in a strongly unionist area like Coleraine. That just said it all, that, you know, we were definitely second class citizens. And I think for people then who were at that time and maybe involved in politics, or they said, you know, we need to do something about this. And I think that was the catalyst for the civil rights movement. You know, the people started speaking out more. They started then protesting more, the one man, one vote. Everything else just sort of lined up behind that. Mm-hmm. Because if you refuse education, then you refuse the pathway to life.
And that was so blatant. It wasn't a feeling. It wasn't a sense. It wasn't an experience. It was a bricks and mortar reality.
Yeah, and that came at a time when Derry, which was a major port, was in decline. The investment was taken away from it. And I might have been young at the time, but I could see the decline of the Derry port. You know, we could see the ships coming in regularly, the cattle, the grain, you know, the timber, the coal. And all of a sudden, that just started getting smaller and smaller. And
there you go. It's a fascinating conversation, actually. It's a fascinating insight. And we've got guests from the world of entertainment. We've got guests from, you know, who've gone through experiences in their lives through loss or joy or whatever it might be. And we also get the politicians on, and it's a different type of a story. You know, it's not me, you know, challenging their political beliefs or ideologies or what have you. It's people from all different political backgrounds just sort of having their say as well too. So that's live from 11 a.m. It's on our website, highlandradio.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can watch it too from 11 a.m. on the YouTube channel. Just search The Greg Hughes Show. Killian McCann McLaughlin's with me. Hi, Killian.
How are you doing, Greg? Thanks for having me on.
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Not so bad. Buzzing this morning now. I'm after releasing a track this morning, so I'm pretty buzzing, but hopefully I get the track out and get good promotion on it, and it does well. It's been on the long finger for a long time, so it's been about the guts of a year and a half trying to get this year one out, but hopefully I get the ball running, get a lot of tunes out.
Brilliant stuff. And you know, we've had you in studio, I don't know how long ago it is, but it's long enough for me to know that this music stuff's been a big passion of yours for quite some time.
Definitely, growing up, I was always playing music. I started playing drums originally because my dad was a drummer, and then he played guitar, and then I did a bit of singing when I was younger. And then I was in secondary school, my teacher started telling me to sing again, so started doing a lot of singing, started doing a bit of gigging, and then now I'm in college doing songwriting, and I'm loving it. So,
how has that worked for you, sort of being around other creatives? You know, because there's a process. You can have ideas and you can have, you know, words, but it's translating them then into music. Like, there's a process, there's a skill to that.
Yeah, definitely. It is. I like being up home too and being around musicians up home, but you see down in BIM in the college, I mean, you're surrounded by a lot of like-minded people. You do get a lot, you obviously get people that aren't that into it too, but there's a lot of people that are driven in the same way just to do music, and they're not interested in anything else, and they're writing all the time, and they're looking to do gigs. Like, you know, if you're looking to play a gig, there's always another band or another person that's looking to support or looking to play with you or something like that there down there. Yeah. And Dublin obviously is great for exposure and for like just...
Well, you never know who's in the audience either,
that's
do
it
you?
Too, yeah. Yeah. That can happen up here as well, but in Dublin especially, like that was kind of one of the main reasons I want to get down, because you could play a gig anywhere in Dublin and there could be someone random, you don't know who, you could just be lying
and
on.
The audiences can be very receptive, they can be tough, but it's about honing your skills. It's like anything. If you're a carpenter, you know, the way you get good at it is you keep doing it.
Exactly.
I mean, you can have that raw skill, but you know, that building your own stage presence and your own style, it's a constant evolution.
Definitely. It's all about confidence. I always say that to anybody, like whether it's playing music in your room or going to an open mic night or going on the radio or whatever, like as if you have... Like, I've been doing the gigs for, like, 3 years now, and when I first started doing it, I would have gone up and just played the song, not said a word, you know, kind of a thing. And now I'd say I've got a definitely a bit more chat about me. Like, you know,
I realize there's more to the show.
That's it, Di. But it's pure confidence. It's not your abilities, nothing to do with it. Like,
yeah, and it sounds to me like you've got a lot of stuff now and it's pent up. You just want to get it out there now.
That's it, yeah. Because it's the first song I put out of March last year. And then it's not until now of the second song come out. But since then, I've written a lot of songs. So I have a lot of songs there ready to go, you know.
We're going to hear Peace of Mind. Are you going to do one or two? Do you want to just do Peace of Mind? Or you're
I'll do Peace of Mind. Okay. Yeah.
Well, and tell us about this song.
So Peace of Mind, I wrote it in college last year. And it's about... I'd be very kind of dopey, forgetful. So like at times, so I'd be well to forget something. And it's more about forgetting, like going through life and forgetting certain things or forgetting what you did yesterday, but remembering one thing or one person or a moment in your life from ages ago.
It's all right. I understand when
apologize.
You're in that. No, you're in that passion space. I get that.
But you know, that's kind of, it's just about that.
Yeah,
being forgetful but remembering certain things in certain times in your life, and I feel like everybody's kind of like that too. You forget something, like you forget.
And we're in the summer period now, and some of that's kind of the summer vibe, isn't it?
It is. Yeah,
reflect on.
Yeah,
on those.
I feel like it's a song that's kind of it's driven like that, and it's I feel like it's, it would be good for the car and stuff like that there in the summer, and the chorus is about being in the car and stuff. Yeah. So
now we're gonna hear a version of it, and it's fantastic to get an acoustic version to get Killian into the studio. But I can't encourage you enough that when you finish listening to it, get on to search out Killian McLaughlin, Linktree, linktr.ie. But that's to sort of put all the links in there.
Yeah.
You're on Spotify, are
That's
you?
Everything. That link will give you my Facebook and my Instagram, my TikTok, and then the Spotify link or DistroKid link will take you to Apple Music or Amazon or Spotify, anything at all.
Okay.
So,
right. Someone's Joe Dex messaged me. Hard to beat a few Friday morning F-bombs.
Apologies.
Sorry.
Apologies.
I had to reference the text because otherwise I'd have just been laughing and it would have made no sense. Listen, Killian, you're all right, buddy, all right? So here we go. Peace of Mind. Now, your guitar is going to be coming out through the desk, isn't it? So I don't know if you need headphones or will that sound will do you. Right, go on.
Take your headphones
away.
On.
Are you sure? Yeah.
Unfortunately, okay. I'm supposed to have an old loop station and a bit more going on here, but...
A bit of technical difficulties.
Right, that okay. happens. Right. This is Peace of Mind, everybody. Morning to evening, not a clue is beyond me. I can't see through these intoxicating movie screens. I'm not sure I can explain it, just how you feel. Left my dignity down at Jackie's bar next door. I'll drop in tomorrow if my boo gets any dough. Wear rich hazel hair in my lens. Swore I've seen before. With my mind in pieces, I never seem to pick 'em up. I run to see you behind. Reminiscing to our songs in the car, we put them on. Shins and sell them, Bobby sitting here. And this one, I can still hear your voice and ears. Sing along, not a lot in my head gets through, and I can't forget about you. Oh, yeah. Four in the morning, couldn't even tell the day. Came out with cars, didn't my said I should lay off the haze. Heads like a rocket, someone tell me what's my name. Oh no. With my mind in pieces, I never seem to pick them up. I run to see you behind. Reminiscing to our songs in the car, we put them on. Shit to tell the Bobby sitting here. In this one, I can still hear your voice. I used to sing along, not a lot in my head.
gets through it, I can't forget about you. Oh yeah. My mind in pieces, I never seem to pick them up. I wanna see you behind. With my mind in pieces, I never seem to pick them up. I wanna see you behind. Reminiscing to songs in the car, we put them on. Should tell them Bobby sitting here. And this one, I can still hear your voice. I used sing along, not a lot in my head gets through, and I can't forget about you. Oh yeah, I can't forget about you.
Killian, that's brilliant.
Thank you very
Fantastic
much.
Fantastic stuff.
Got out of tune there, maybe, but...
Were you?
No, maybe.
I don't think
allegedly.
So. I don't think so. You were at the Fall Maritime Festival in Derry recently.
Yes.
I presume most of your gigging, as we've already referenced, is down the country at this stage, because it suits where you're located.
Well, I'm kind of coming up. I'll be coming up the road every weekend from college to gig, because right. I have, you see, you pre-booked the gigs kind of the year before. Like, this time of the year, we'll be booking for next year.
Yeah.
So we have them pre-booked. So I'll get a couple of gigs down in Dublin during the week. It's actually handier getting them during the week, because it's a lot busier at the weekend. But I need to get in. It's all agencies down there, CC. So I need to get in with, like, one
of
the booking agents.
Because you're in there, though, you see. And then when you... It's all about breakthrough. So when you break that through, then you're in.
Exactly.
Which is brilliant.
And you get busking too, like Grafton Street and stuff, because you see the amount of people that have bussed there and they've just blown up. Like,
it's astonishing.
Like even the likes of like Glenn Hanser, Gawrasim, like, you know, just people like out there that just buskers. Like, yeah.
And that really
off.
Talks to actually having to do the legwork. Does
yeah,
it? You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Exactly,
you just have to be. Listen, it's great to see your career development, Killian, and it's only going one way, and that's up.
Yeah,
continued success. Get out there and support that single now. We'll link Killian's link tree, which is just a link that contains a series of links, but you can search out Killian McCann McLaughlin online, and I'm sure they'll come across your stuff. What's the release schedule now? That's Peace of Mind. That's out now. When do you want to have your next track out?
Do I have a song that I actually like? I don't like a lot of my songs. There's a song called Marilyn Monroe, but then I was speaking to my cousin after I played it at a gig, and Marilyn Monroe's trademark, so I don't think I can release that song.
I'm not so sure about that.
I don't know.
No,
I looked it up, and
not,
it said...
You're a thing, as far as I'm aware. You have artistic license.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe.
So I think you'd be okay.
I'll have to check it with Marilyn herself, maybe.
Well, I'll tell you, if that's the case, Billy Joel's banjaxed with his song.
true. No, but I have a lot of tunes. I need to get them recorded and get them out. That's it.
No,
just
I think you're okay. You are allowed. You are allowed an artistic usage as well. Brilliant stuff, Killian. Thank you so much for calling.
Thanks
in.
Very
really
much,
appreciate
Greg.
It.
I really appreciate
Continued
the opportunity.
Success. And any gigs coming up in the near future? I don't want to put you on the spot.
No major gigs. I'm playing in the Water's Edge in Rathmullen tonight, if anybody wants to come out and see. And I'm playing in Port Salon and the Stores Bar tomorrow night, if there's any holiday goers up in Port Salon.
Yeah, no, it's going to be busy
on Sunday, unfortunately.
Well, unfortunately, you love it.
Yeah.
You love it. All right, well done. That's Killian McCann McLaughlin. A few people messaging in already. Sounding great, Killian. Brilliant. That's actually from Mark Black too, which is high praise too. Dolores, well done, lad, and on it goes. Okay, you can make your way out whenever you want to. I just have to wrap things up, Killian. Thank you very much, though, for your time. And go on to our Facebook page, by the way, and we'll link Killian's socials there as well. So just to let you know that John Bresnan is live on Around the Northwest from Dolan Spire and Rafoe. They're celebrating a year in business, which is actually really quite a significant milestone in this day and age. So call in to Dolan's, by the way. I'm sure they've got plenty of enticements there, not least us. Shannon's with John, and I think Joe as well too. So go in, say hello to the team, get a few pictures if you want, and you'll also be able to watch the next cash draw live, because John Bresson has €2,000 to give away on that programme. We've one draw down, five to go. Still plenty of reasons to get involved. 0800 749 125,000 to get your tickets, or go onto the website highlandradio.com. Now, some of your comments coming in over the course of the morning. There are roadworks in Milford and people are using the back roads. This morning it's like the M50. Traffic is flying with no respect for the back road they're on. There are a number of children and elderly using this road to walk and cycle. Please, they say, slow down. Always good advice. We were seeing some of the... we were commenting on some of the posts underneath posts about Radida Adeleke. A caller says, most of the racist comments on the RTE post are getting absolutely slated by other Irish people criticising the racists by commenting on their comments. I think they call that in this day and age ratioing. Right, just to remind you that you can check out the podcast, the Greg Hughes podcast, live for you in about 3.5 minutes on our website across all the podcasting platforms, and you can watch it on YouTube. Councillor Jerry McMonagall got a very interesting story from his time in Derry, coming to Donegal, why he came to Donegal, and so on and so forth. So check that out when it suits you. But here in Radioland, stay tuned, because John Bresson, as I mentioned, is coming live from Raffo. But for me, Greg Hughes, Caroline Orr, who researched and produced, and of course Shannon, who works with us diligently on the show, have a great weekend. We'll chat to you real soon.